When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
That he plays. So if you go back to what I said on Destination Dynasty with the draft pick war, if you can buy six starts of that potential, whether he hits it or not, six starts of that potential is probably worth early second, early to mid second at minimum, just for the starts, not for the asset, just for the starts. So call it the 206 just for the plays or just for the weekly starts. Maybe you only get six starts out of Justin Fields. But the mid-second, just for those games, knowing his fantasy upside is probably worth it. So I'm currently sitting at less than 7% Justin Fields. I'd like to get that probably up to 10 to 15%. So I'd like to add two or three shares. And the idea being, it isn't so much because I believe in him long-term. I don't think he's a good NFL quarterback. Everything that I look at from a passing standpoint tells me he's not a long-term starter. However, I look at the draft pick war and I look at what he would be if he started only 6 to 8 games. That represents less than half of the season, which is going to be less than that 50% of snaps. And if the Steelers are kind of toiling in 500 range, they may decide to go see what they have in Justin Fields. That's where they've been the last 3-4 years. So what makes you think they're going to be in any different scenario this season? So I'd like to get more Fields, but how do I do it? So if you go to Keep Trade Cut and you actually look at how you would obtain Justin Fields. And I'll turn off the slider for the extreme tight end premium and just look at what it would cost to get Justin Fields. So you put him into the trade calculator and what it would take is right around that pick, the 205, the 206 straight up. And I will say you're not getting him for that. The person that has him, whether they feel that he's a long-term option or not, I think they're confident he will get opportunity. So I think that assessment by the manager that has Fields is correct. But at the same time, if I go and look at my pick ownership, which I've talked about on here many, many times, I have a lot of picks in that range. So I'm trying to figure out how can I creatively do it without dipping into my late firsts to acquire Justin Fields. What I don't want to do is go say, here, I'll give you the 111, 112, because that represents a lot of the risk that I'm taking. I'm banking on the outcome that he's going to start 8 games. I'm banking on the outcome that he's going to contribute fantasy-wise top 12 or better in 2, 3, 4 of those games that he starts. And then I'm also banking that I'm going to be able to resell him or cash back out for something comparable. But then if you really start thinking about it, it's probably that I have to up my offers to something in that range of 201 to 204 and maybe add in a third. Maybe add in a pick, which is going to be exactly what I'm going to try to do. I'm going to go to the picks that are right at the top of the second round, but then be willing to add in, I don't know, an abundance of those thirds that I have. Right now, I'm sitting on 72 25 thirds. 72. So 70% excess of thirds this year. And then if I look at my thirds this year, man, a ton of picks, 307, 7 shares. 308, 5 shares. 310, 8 shares. A ton of these thirds that I can probably throw in. So what's the move there? I think the move is to probably take one of those higher thirds. Maybe it's even a top 4 third, 304. And again, it's killing two birds with one stone. I think this is the idea of how to hide some value. So I offer the 202 and the 304 for Justin Fields. And maybe I'll start by asking for a 25 third. Do I want more 25 thirds? Not exactly. But again, that represents a secondary move where I'm kicking one of those picks where I already have too many of them this year to the future. So I'm hiding some of the value in the deal and I'm throwing that to somebody. And it's also giving me some extrinsic value of, okay, now I moved out of the 304 to a future third. And on the clock, is there probably going to be a couple players where I go, man, I really wish I had the 304 here instead of a 25 third? Sure. But especially if I look at my roster and I'm up against the roster crunch, like do the math with your construction and figure, all right, do I have the room to add two or three players off waivers. So one thing I have to keep reminding myself is this is a great class for players on waivers. Even if you have a four-round draft, I'm not going to want to be the team that has too many picks in this class and then miss out on a couple of the names that I want to add on waivers. Because the reality is the player you draft at 312 and the player somebody's picking up off waivers, the difference is minuscule. In fact, the difference could just be a random fluke play or news blurb or something that means you can actually move the player versus having them stuck on your roster. So I think this is the way to go get somebody like Fields. If you have to give up, you know, an early second and a late second, get back a third. I mean, whatever the deal is that looks something like that, as long as I can try to do it without giving up the leverage, meaning I'm getting as many assets back as I'm getting or giving, then I'm totally fine with trying something that looks like you're overpaying. Because you plug that into the trade calculator here, and I'll just put in the 212 and the 202. And then you compare that with what it would cost to get Fields, and it's a big time overpay. And if you put in a 25 third into the other side, all of a sudden you're looking at a deal where you're still taking a bath by, gosh, 2,400 points on the trade calculator, to the point where the piece that needs to be added, you're probably like, that doesn't make sense. Why would I add another third to the deal? You know, why would I add a player that probably is around the range of the 212 to the Justin Fields side? So it's definitely a deal where you're not going to get it done if you're going off KTC. You have to be creative. You have to kind of mask some of the upside value that I'm acknowledging exists on why I want to buy more Fields into the deal so that I can get him without giving up the 110, 111, 112. Like, if I'm paying that price, I'm paying the sticker price. But I do want to increase my exposure at the price he's going now, just because I think it gives me not only return on my investment from a war perspective when he starts, but also maybe I can use him for three games, get a couple good weeks out of him, and turn around and sell him for, I don't know, the 201 next year. Maybe a second and a third in 2026. The point is, I'm able to get back out. It's almost like a rental car that I use to drive across country, or I'm going to a wedding, I go buy a suit, you use it, wear it, return it. It's kind of the same purpose here with Fields. So that's one of the reasons I'm trying to get him at his current price, and I'm probably willing to pay maybe 20% or so above the market. The next player that I'm interested in acquiring, it is a tight end, and it is the current tight end, where is he ranked? Tight end 17, Pat Freiermuth. So Pat Freiermuth, it's not a Steeler thing, I promise you, but I'm looking at Pat Freiermuth. I looked at Pat Freiermuth's war through the first 2 years, dealt with two concussions, was injured last year, was in an absolute dumpster fire of a situation last year. But I look at him relative to some of the other tight ends that are valued ahead of him. Michael Mayer, Cole Kmet especially. Cole Kmet, Luke Musgrave is one I would take Freiermuth over. Then there's a few others that are even higher that if you could do a pivot off of and get a plus, Jake Ferguson to Pat Freiermuth plus, George Kittle, Evan Ingram. I mean, people may feel a little uncomfortable going from there, but there's going to be somebody in that range. There's not going to be 12 tight ends. And last year, right now, looking at this list, other than Kyle Pitts, all the other tight ends, excluding Brock Bowers, all were tight ends that produced. I would be willing to guess that there's not going to be 12 tight ends that produce in that range that makes it painful if you don't have one there. And also, if you look at last year's war at tight end, it really wasn't a benefit to having the elite tight ends because there were 10 good ones. Whether you had Jake Ferguson or David Njoku or Evan Ingram or Dalton Kincaid, it didn't matter. If you just had one of those guys, you kept up with the elite tight ends by 85-90%. And if that's going to continue, then it makes the difference maker tight ends, like peak Kelsey, that type of tight end, a big deal. But if it's all going to stay in this range, what is the point of paying for one of those tight ends or not being willing to pivot off of one of those tight ends that are above Freiermuth in the dynasty rankings just based on recency bias? So I think the way to get him, and I'm going to turn on the extra tight end premium slider for this. So I'm going to put it up to the 3+ on Keep Trade Cut, because if you do that, now you're working in the range where definitely they're valued as flexes in your league. And I'm looking, and I'm going to pull up a trade and just to see if I can do this, because I'm looking at where I am overexposed. I have 10 shares of Evan Ingram. I'm at 23% of Evan Ingram. I have 20% of Noah Fant. Those are the two that I'd probably be willing to pivot off of. So I'm going to throw in a couple trades. Evan Ingram for Pat Freiermuth. And again, this is probably for the people that are playing in like two PPR leagues. Where can I actually find a piece that I can add to pivot? And it's honestly not that big of a difference when you look at this. Maybe you can get a third on top of Freiermuth for Evan Ingram. That's probably the range. But again, I don't want to acquire more thirds, so I have to be a little more creative. So I think what I would probably try to do is I would be willing to package, if I have a late first in one of these leagues, can I give Evan Ingram and the 112 and get back Freiermuth and a 25 first? Can I do that? And if I plug that into the calculator, and again, this is where Keep Trade Cut doesn't reflect actual dynasty markets. You put in the 112, then you put in a 2025 mid first, and it's a lot closer than probably the real market says. So the 2025 mid first compared to the 2024 112, it's a little bit of a discrepancy, but not as much as the real market is. So it says this is a fair trade, but this is what I would be trying to do. Because I think even though KTC says that's a fair trade, if you can turn the 112, the 111 into a future first, even if it ends up being the 109 next year, the lottery ticket of it being potentially the 102, 103, 104, 105, 106 even, is huge compared to it being the 112. The other benefit, again, I don't know how many times I'm going to say this on this show, but you don't want to have to make all these picks. So talking about my exposure to those picks, I mean, I have 6 shares of the 111. I have 6 shares of the 110. I have 5 shares of the 112. I don't want to make all those picks. I'll take a couple shots, but I don't feel bad because I bet you I can't go move one of those picks for a future first. So how can I hide some value to get that kind of thing done? And this is, again, an example of a non-leveraged trade where I am essentially accomplishing two things. I'm tearing off of Ingram to get Freiermuth. I have too much Ingram, not enough Freiermuth. I'm just betting that they're going to be closer together. So I'm accomplishing A, the portfolio goal there, but B, I'm accomplishing the extrinsic goal of moving the pick to the future, moving that 112 to a future first. And I get it. People will say, I'm not moving those picks yet. I'll wait till it's on the clock. My experience, if you wait till that 112 is on the clock, most likely there's a tier break and there's a reason there's no market for the 112. Are you going to get burned every once in a while where a player slips and you're not going to have them because you moved the 112 for a future first? Sure. More often than not, though, your league is going to realize the tiers that you're also working in, and they're going to go, yeah, I'm good. I don't need that pick. I'm at 203. I have no incentive to trade up. So if you can eliminate some of those back-end firsts, but hide the value in the form of maybe a portfolio move where you're shifting a player from one to the other that are close enough in a calculator where you're okay taking the bath there, but also the person is thinking they're getting an upgrade, that's the kind of deal that I want to make to get my exposure from Freiermuth up and my exposure from Evan Ingram down. So next up, I'm going to go two more positions, and I'll rapid fire these because I think this one is much more straightforward. The next one is Raheem Mostert, who is currently the RB41. He's up a little bit, but generally he's hovered in this range to where the person that has him is way more in on having him on the roster for a specific reason than, say, the person that's trying to buy him. The person that's trying to buy him is saying, well, they're going to take a running back in the draft. He's 32, which who cares how old he is? Running backs in this range are one-year bets. I don't care if you're 24 or if you're 32. You're the same thing. Raheem Mostert, Chuba Hubbard are back-to-back. They're over 7 years apart in age. It doesn't matter. It literally doesn't matter. The Dolphins just extended Mostert for another year, so who is to say why he can't play through 2025? Yet after last year, it was like, oh, he's done for. Because he got injured, which, I mean, you expect that from a 32-year-old running back that's been injured every year of his career. So it's going to happen. But you also know the week-to-week ceiling. It's a little bit like the Justin Fields argument, except for at running back, but at a much lower tier of dynasty value. So what can I move to get Raheem Mostert? Can I move Nick Chubb, get Raheem Mostert plus? Can I move Zamir White? Can I move maybe a running back that people are more confident with, but is the exact same kind of bet? Aaron Jones, James Conner. I mean, Joe Mixon, an absolute riser in Dynasty ranks. But you can go through and look at all these players that you would already deem their value being 100% tied to what they can give you this year. And then everybody else is just a one-year bet. So I'm looking at my exposure. Do I have the stones to go from Derrick Henry to Raheem Mostert? I have a lot of Derrick Henry, 18% Derrick Henry. And I think when you get Derrick Henry, and I've bought a couple of those Derrick Henrys over the last 6 months, when you buy him, you know what you're buying. But I kind of look at him versus Raheem Mostert and go, is that a place where I'm willing to pivot? Now, you have to look at your construction at running back. A lot of my teams that have a guy like Derrick Henry, they're already set up to just ride him. So he is my best running back. So I'm not really in a hurry to pivot off of him for even more value because I've probably soaked a ton of value into draft capital or to other positions. So I'm built in a way where I'm already kind of built around Derrick Henry. But I look at somebody like Chuba Hubbard is one that I have a ton of exposure to. 17% of Chuba Hubbard. That would be one that I'd be willing to move down from. Chase Brown, you know, hit or miss on Chase Brown, but that's one that you could probably consider moving from Chase Brown to Mostert, given the fact that one is young and one isn't. But people value Chase Brown higher. Zach Moss, same thing. You could basically split the Bengals backfield and try to go to Mostert. David Montgomery is another one. I've shed some David Montgomery only because he is what he is. He's on a good team. He's got a role. But it doesn't feel like there's a ton of ceiling for David Montgomery. So I think looking through your running back exposure, especially if you're already roster constructed in a way where you're willing to essentially just kind of play the any running back on a 53, if you can find some of these players you're overexposed on, like for me, Moss, I have a ton of exposure, have a decent amount of Jaylen Warren, Chuba Hubbard. Like those are the types, David Montgomery, and then obviously Derrick Henry. Those are the ones where, again, same concept as the Freiermuth Evan Ingram trade. Can I pivot and turn something that is kind of in a dead zone of value? Can I move one of those running backs and a 212, 211, 210 for a future second? Because most likely, if I have Zach Moss, he's a placeholder on my team. He's holding place as my RB3, RB4 in a specific spot. Mostert would just step into that spot. And so can I turn a pick that I know for sure I can't move for a future pick in the same round and swap running backs? So that's how I want to increase my Mostert shares. I probably want to get up to 15%, 10 to 15% of Mostert. So it means I need to probably buy two or three. So if you have them and you're in a league with me, that type of deal I'll be interested in. And then the last one, I was going to pick out a couple different receivers, but I think there are probably so much opinion built in to the receivers that are in these ranges. I'm going to actually save a receiver episode talking about how I manage my receiver portfolio for next time. Because there's three or four names that I was zooming in here just thinking about, all right, lowest common denominator receivers that I know are good players that I can tier down to that really don't have a lot of demand. I mean, there's a lot of demand for Marquise Brown. There's a lot of demand for Deontay Johnson. Not as much, but there's still a decent amount of demand for Jerry Jeudy. But there's a few other receivers that are in the exact same tier. Cooper Kupp, Terry McLaurin. Calvin Ridley's also one that's gotten a lot of buzz because of his change to Tennessee. But Terry McLaurin and Cooper Kupp stood out to me as ones that I've slowly been kind of moving away from those guys. I used to have a ton of Terry McLaurin, and now not as much. Not as much. Only 8% of Terry McLaurin. The other one, Cooper Kupp, I went through a period last year where I was shedding as much Cooper Kupp as I can. You know, the worries of, oh man, he might retire. That knee injury is super serious. Just I don't know what's going to happen with him. I got down to one share of Cooper Kupp. And at his price, currently wide receiver 37, it's hard to justify not having as much as of him as you do Stephon Diggs. What's the difference? What is the difference? Amari Cooper is ahead of Cooper Kupp. So again, I think there's some preference here. I'll talk separately on another show of how to balance the wide receiver portfolio, because I think that's a whole nother animal among itself. I don't even want to put one out here because I wouldn't do it justice in terms of what my process is. But I think the theme for this week with buys is you can easily go to Keep Trade Cut and say, oh, I like the price on that player. It's not realistic. You plug it in. Here's the thing. You are not accounting for what it takes to pry the player away from the team that already has him. You're not accounting for what it takes to actually get what you want done. There are a lot of managers out there that as soon as you want something, they know they have you. So they're going to charge you a little bit of a tax. So if you're trying to balance a portfolio and you're trying to kind of keep your assets always allocated and building up the most equity. That's the number one goal of a portfolio, is always be building the equity, but do it in creative ways where it takes advantage of other people's bias on players, the psychology of how other people view assets and view the dynasty landscape at a certain time of year. So that's the theme, is trying to get these deals done where instead of just going and paying the pick for the player, because if I go to you and I say, I want Evan Ingram, or in this case, I want Pat Freiermuth. Well, you know what? Here's probably the stark reality of the person with Pat Freiermuth. They are elated that somebody wants Pat Freiermuth. So after they get over the shock that somebody actually wants him because he's just an obscure player that's probably their tight end two, tight end three, tight end four, once they get over the fact that you want that player, then they're going to sit back and think, all right, and this is one of the detriments of being a content creator is, why does Scott want Pat Freiermuth? What does he know that I don't know? And the reality is I don't know anything more than what you know. But I listen to NFL stuff and I make my bets based on things that I'm hearing or things that I want to bet on. So I don't know anything more than what you probably know. It's not an information edge. But then they'll go through that period of, okay, Scott wants him, so what does he know that I don't know? Which means I'm now going to hold on to Pat Freiermuth like 20% higher than I would have before. But then you really think about it, okay, yeah, I'd like to sell him. But as soon as I try to do the one for one, I'm now being charged a tax. Oh, so he was worth the 206. Well, now it's got to be the 202. And just because you want him, that's what it's going to. And I'm not in the business of paying or overpaying just because I want something. That's not how I want to balance my portfolio. That's not how I want to add shares of players that I'm interested in. So you got to be creative. You got to give up sometimes an asset you don't want and accept something back that maybe is a little less preferred, but it also can help you in a different way. That's the classic move the 208 for a future second. I'm taking a little hit, or market value wise, I'm taking a little hit there, but I'm also gaining the flexibility of the pick. So maybe I won't realize that flexibility until 6 months from now when it's the middle of the season and I have a second to sell. But the idea is that can help you get deals done and help you balance the portfolio without giving up too much value. So with that, check out everything at destinationdevy.com, patreon.com/allgas. If you're still here, 25 and change in, use promo code DDD for the Destination Devy Draft. We're doing the draft stream starting on Thursday night of the NFL Draft. We will go for 15 plus hours, all 3 days of the draft, and we'll be giving away more than I can even count. I have a list of what we're going to be giving away, and I don't even think this does it justice. Jerseys, cards, roster reviews, Heisman membership, merchandise. So much stuff will be given away during those 3 days, but you have to enter using promo code DDD on Underdog. Do a deposit, and you'll be entered in to win all of the prizes during the draft stream. And for those that haven't heard, Dynasty Portfolio Weekly will take a little hiatus for the summer. It will continue on until the draft. And then it will take a hiatus in favor of Underdog Portfolio Weekly. I'm going to be max entering the Superflex Tournament and Best Ball Mania 5. So I will be doing an Underdog Portfolio Weekly show tracking my progress and my strategies through that. So even if you're a Dynasty player only, don't tune out, because I will be talking about a lot of my portfolio strategies of how to manage what's going to be 150 entries in each of those tournaments. So there will be a serious portfolio approach, which obviously will translate over to a lot of what I'm already doing with Dynasty. So that should help everybody out. And with that, I will be gone until next week, where I'll be talking about Dynasty portfolio sells.